Blessings, peace, and good will be upon you all. Welcome once again to Bible Beyond the Basics. I am your host, Dr. Clinton Baldwin of Declaimer Ministries International, where the love of Jesus motivates. This is a faith-based ministry located at 66A Brunswick Avenue in Spanish Town and also in Alexandria, Virginia, USA. You may visit us at any time online at dikaioma.com or email at dikaioma2017@gmail.com. I would be delighted to hear from you. The last few months, I have been studying the issue of the Sabbath and what a journey it has been. For several scholarly angles, we have concluded that Jesus is a Sabbath. By that I mean that the Sabbath found its fulfillment in Jesus. Just as how the other Old Testament sacrifices and the other Old Testament sacred days, like Passover, Pentecost, Tabernacles, found their fulfillment in Jesus, so likewise the seventh-day Sabbath also found its fulfillment in Jesus. Therefore, the Christian rests in a person and not a day. And that is far more scientific and practical and biblically accurate than the traditional way of seeing the fourth commandment. It is the position you will take when you study the Bible beyond the elementary level on Bible Beyond the Basics. If you need lots of evidences, I invite you to visit online again at dikaioma.com. Click on the tab Media or Bible Study, and you will find several studies that discuss the topic of the Sabbath in an in-depth manner. I will be doing a new series on the development of the Christian canon of Scripture, or how I like to call it, how the Bible became a book. Have you ever thought how the Bible came about? Who wrote the biblical books? How were they written? When were they written? To whom were they first written? What motivated anyone to write the books of the Bible? These are some of the questions and issues I will be dealing with in this new series on the Christian canon of Scripture. Please permit me to begin with the development of the New Testament canon, probably because I am a New Testament specialist and feel more comfortable with this sector of the topic. First, let's define two key terms that are pivotal to our discussion going forward. These two terms are one, canon, and two, scripture. The word canon, in this context, signifies authoritative and inspired writings that served as a standard, or rather that serve as a standard by which all other books and doctrines are assessed. The 66 books that are found in the Christian Bible constitute the Christian canon. These serve as a standard, a yardstick, a benchmark by which all other inspired writings are judged. Scripture, on the other hand, signifies any writings which were considered inspired and may be authoritative for a particular community. You see, in addition to the 66 books that are now found in our Bible, there were many other books in circulation among Christians and Jews, and all these other books were considered inspired writings, inspired scripture by the people who had them. From this wide pool of inspired books, the 66 that now constitute the Christian Bible were chosen. So scripture is a wider term than canon. Canon is a select number of scriptures done by a particular community at a particular point in history. As we should see, there have been several canons of scriptures over the centuries. In fact, there are different canons of scriptures within Christianity even today. That a book was designated scripture did not mean that the book was or is canonical. However, once the book was designated canonical, then it for sure is scripture or was scripture. Say it another way, all canonical books are scriptural writings, but not all scriptural writings are canonical. Once again, The canon is a select number of scripture chosen to form the Christian Bible, the Christian standard. The importance and relevance of, you know, this distinction will become clearer as we proceed. Let's zero in on how the New Testament canon was developed. The New Testament, as we know it, is centered around the life and teachings of Jesus. So we have the historic Jesus, who lived from around 6 BC to AD 33, 34, thereabout. We're not sure exactly the date of his death and birth, but scholarship dates it somewhere 6 BC to 33, 34 AD. After his death, many books were written about him. Of course, we have the four biographies of his life, better known as the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. We have the Pauline letters, some 14 letters thereabout, said to have been written by the Apostle Paul. I say said to have been written by Paul, for as we will come to see, we cannot be sure that all the letters attributed to Paul were written by him. But let's save that for another discussion. For now, we are simply identifying the books of the New Testament. In addition, we have the Acts of the Apostles, written by Luke, the same person who wrote the Gospel of Luke. We have the book of Hebrews, written by an unknown author. The epistles of James, 1st, 2nd, Peter, 1st, 2nd, 3rd, John, and Jude. And, of course, Revelation. Let me hope I have gotten all of them. Okay, I think I might have left out Titus, etc., but you get the picture. We have all 27 books. A very important point about these books is that they were all written separately and circulated on their individual scrolls. They were not found between two covers as we have them now in our modern Bibles. Each of these books were written to different audiences, and they existed in different scrolls circulating separately by themselves. So what we now have as the New Testament is a library of 27 independent books being pulled together and placed between two covers. And the same holds true for the 39 books of the Old Testament. Now, how on earth did these books make it into one package now called the New Testament canon? First, let's look at some additional background material. These 27 books were not the only books about Jesus that circulated in the first century and for centuries thereafter. How do we know this? The New Testament books gave us much indication of other books. Take, for example, the opening verse of Luke chapter 1, verse 1. It reads, "Inasmuch as many have undertaken to compile an account of the things accomplished among us." Inasmuch as many have undertaken to compile an account of the things accomplished among us, just as they were handed down to us by those who were from the beginning, were eyewitnesses and servants of the word. It seemed fitting for me as well, having investigated everything carefully from the beginning, to write it out for you in consecutive order, most excellent Theophilus. So Luke is saying that inasmuch as many have undertaken to compile an account of the things accomplished among us. In other words, there were other books in circulation before Luke wrote his book. Another very important book is what is now known as Q. When the Gospels of Matthew and Luke are compared, it can be clearly seen that they have common material unique to both books that they pull from another source. Q is the short form for the German word Quell, Q-U-E-L-L-E, which means source. The Germans were the first to have identified this, or they were the pioneers, rather, in identifying a book embedded in Matthew and Luke. We do not have the physical manuscript of Q, but we can identify Q as is found in Matthew and Luke, point, there were other books around when the New Testament books were written. And what are some of these other books? Well, one way to know that there were many other books is just to rehearse and remember the names of the disciples of Jesus. Practically every disciple had a book written in his name. So we have books like the Gospel of Thomas, the Acts of Peter, the Gospel of Judas. Yes, Gospel of Judas. Even Judas had a gospel in his name. And there were dozens of other books circulating within Christianity at the same time as the current New Testament books were written. Of course, many of these books were written long after the death of the apostles. They were simply written in their names, and also, of course, in the names of other prominent people who lived around. Again, please remember that these books would circulate on their individual scrolls. So Mark, for example, existed and circulated on a scroll by itself. The same for John and Romans and Revelation, with the extra books like the Gospel of Peter, the Gospel of Judas, the Gospel of Thomas. They all circulated individually on their respective scrolls, and this happened for centuries. Not only did these books circulated on their respective scrolls, but as indicated earlier, they were written initially to particular communities of Christians, and in many cases were only considered authoritative for the specific community to whom they were written. So Matthew's Gospel, for example, was written to a Jewish Christian audience, and while it was authoritative for that group of Christians, it was not necessarily authoritative for other communities of Christians. Paul's letters to Galatians, for example, and Romans and Corinthians were written to those respective churches, and they were not necessarily seen as authoritative scripture in other churches that did not have those books. One reason for this is that mass production of books did not exist in the ancient world. The art of writing and reading and the production of writing materials are very elaborate and expensive and highly technical affair in the ancient world. So that a particular church had one book on a scroll did not mean that another church, even a neighboring church, much more a church in another country, had the same book. So as the books circulated on their respective scrolls, so likewise they circulated to distinctive communities with distinctive emphases and authority. Another point to bear in mind also is that the books were not written at the same time. Decades elapsed in the time of writing of many of the books now in the New Testament. Mark, for example, was written in the 60s, and Matthew approximately 15 to 20 years later, around AD 80, 85. So while Mark had authority in Mark's church, for sure, Matthew would not have authority in Mark's church because Matthew was not yet written. And the same holds true for many other books in the New Testament. Now, if these books circulated on the individual scrolls and for a long time was only authoritative to particular communities to which they were written, then it means that for some time there was no New Testament canon. There was no New Testament Bible. Yes, the biblical books were written, but there's a difference between the books circulating as individual books, as opposed to all the books circulating between two covers as a standard canon. So for centuries, as a matter of fact, there was no New Testament canon. In fact, for up to the first 300 years of Christianity, there was no standard, unified collection of books across Christendom. I Another reason why there was no standard collection of books was that Christianity was doctrinally a very, very diverse religion. Very diverse. Okay, I'm going to take a quick break at this time, and then we will continue and clarify some more. But at this point, we are discovering that, number one, the books of the New Testament were written at separate times. They circulated at different communities. They had authority within particular communities, but not necessarily right across Christendom. And that for hundreds of years, the situation continued. So there was no New Testament canon for quite a while, for quite a few centuries within Christianity. We'll take a short break at this time and return and look at how the thing firmed up and how the canon, New Testament canon, came to be. Please stay with me. A short break.
Washing my eyes to see your majesty.
Thank you so very much for staying with me. Before the break, we discovered that there were several books in circulation during the first few centuries of Christianity, and that there was no New Testament canon, as these books only had a particular authority within their respective communities and not right across the board. Another very important dimension that we need to look at, you know, within Christianity that helps us to understand the canon developed, is the doctrinal diversity that existed within early Christianity. Let's look at it this way. During the public ministry of Jesus, no one followed him around with a tape recorder or even with paper and pen and wrote exactly what he said and did on the spot. The books about Jesus were all written decades after his death and ascension. The first book of the New Testament written may have been 1 Thessalonians or Galatians around AD 49-50. The first gospel that was written, the Gospel of Mark. Yes, Mark, not Matthew. But Mark, around AD 64, that's some 30 years after the events of Jesus' life. Matthew and Luke were written in the 70s and 80s, and John's Gospel, along with Revelation, was written in the 90s. So the Gospels were written some 30 years, at least, after the events they describe. The epistles of Paul were written in the 50s and 60s, some 20 to 30 years after Jesus. So on average, the information about Jesus was written some 30 to 60 years after his ascension. Along with these books that are well known today were many other books in circulation about Jesus, as we pointed out earlier, like the Gospel of Q and Gospel of Judas and Thomas and many other books. So we need to ask ourselves, if these books were written decades after Jesus lived, how was the information about Jesus, how was it preserved prior to the writing of these books? It was preserved through oral tradition or word of mouth. That is, one person telling another person, who in turn would pass on the information to another person, and so it continued from person to person for decades and, you know, indeed for centuries. What was the end result of such a process? Diverse understandings and doctrines naturally emerged, because as you communicate information word of mouth, the information got changed and nuanced from community to community. So what happened is that in the early years of Christianity, it was very, very diverse doctrinally. There were Christians who believed that the Jewish Torah should be kept by all Christians, when there were other Christians that believed that it ought not to be kept. In the Corinthian church of the 60s, there were the parties of Jesus and Paul and Peter and Apollos. Please see 1 Corinthians 1. 12 and 13. In the second century, there were Christians who believed that the Old Testament scriptures, along with the God portrayed therein, was good, while others believed that the Old Testament God was a very evil person. There were also Christians who believed that the Old Testament was a very bad book, should not be obeyed, while there were Christians who believed the Old Testament was very good scriptures. There were Christians like the Ebionites who believed that there was only one God, while the Marcionite Christians believed that there were at least two gods, still there were other Christians who believed in 30 gods, others in 300, up to 365 different gods. Yes, Christians. With regard to the creation, there were Christians who believed that it was a product of a cosmic accident, the result of a weak, evil gods. You know, these were Sethian Gnostics. For sure, there were other Christians who believed that the world was created by a good God, Orthodox Christians. With regard to the person of Jesus, there were Christians who believed that he was a man and not God, the Ebionites, for example, while there were other Christians who believed that he was God and not man, the Marcionites. Some Christians believed that Jesus existed prior to his birth, while other Christians claimed that he did not exist prior to his birth. For some Christians, the sacrifice of Christ, his death, was an atoning sacrifice for sins, while other Christians believed that his death was not the basis for salvation. In fact, there were even Christians who believed that he did not die, physically die on the cross. Some Christians believed that everyone could be saved. Other Christians believed that only certain classes of people could be saved. So, because the information about Jesus was being communicated orally in different cultures, in different styles, etc., etc., diverse doctrines were developed about the Christ event. And you may ask, so why did they not read the books of the New Testament that we have now and see the truth? No, not possible. That was before the books that we now have were standardized, were seen as canon, were seen as the authority. All the books, many, many books, would be in circulation, and each book as it emerged from the oral tradition, because there is an intersect between the oral tradition and that which was written, each book as it emerged from the oral tradition emerged with its diverse doctrinal beliefs and systems. So after a time, Christianity was one big religion with dozens of different and contradictory beliefs. Yes, there were some Christians who believed in Jesus and God the way we now believe, but they were just one dimension, one sector of the stream, as it were. There were many streams of doctrine and beliefs within Christianity. So now you can understand why there would be need for standardization, need for canon. Over a period of time, four principal criteria emerged by which the books of the New Testament were chosen. And I will discuss these four criteria briefly. Next week, we will get back to them, elaborate, and unpack this some more. In fact, the best we can do on the subject this week is an overview. So we will get more into the nuts and bolts of the topic as we continue. So four criteria were established, and by these four criteria, the books of the New Testament, which we now have, were chosen. What were they? One, apostolicity. Two, age. Three, widespread use. And four, orthodoxy. Let's run through them briefly. The criterion of apostolicity stipulated that in order for a book to be included in the canon, it had to be written by an apostle or someone closely related to one of the 12 apostles. Thus, the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John were included because it was believed that these were written by the apostles or companion of the apostles. Mark was attributed to John Mark, who served as Peter's assistant in Rome, while Luke and Acts were attributed to Luke, who accompanied Paul on his journeys. Paul, of course, was seen as an apostle in his own right, so a number of letters, around 14, got into the canon based on association with Paul. The criterion of age indicated that no recent book would be included. Only books written closest to the time of the Christ event were to be included in the canon. Widespread circulation, the third criterion, dictated that only books which were read and accepted by the church at large, generally speaking, across Christendom, should be accepted. And finally, the criterion of orthodoxy stipulated that only books that adhere to certain doctrines, doctrines which were held by the principal enclaves of Christianity, like the church at Rome or the church at Alexandria, the church in Jerusalem, doctrines which were considered orthodox, books that conform to those doctrines were to be included into the canon. Of course, these four criteria did not settle the issue totally, because what emerged subsequently were several different canons of Scripture within Christianity, and we will take a look at those canons in subsequent discussion. But in the year 367 AD, something very important happened within Christianity, and I will get back to this. But in the year 367 AD, Athanasius, Bishop of Alexandria in Egypt, wrote a letter to the members in his locality. Each year, the bishop would write a letter to his members or their members in different localities, you know, to counsel them, to inform them of the dates of the festivals of Easter, etc., etc. In 367 AD, Athanasius, Bishop of Alexandria, wrote his 39th festive letter to his churches. And in that letter, he listed the 27 books which we now have in our New Testament. He listed them and then he remarked, I quote, "These are foundations of salvation, that those who thirst may be satisfied with the living words they contain. In these alone the teachings of godliness is proclaimed. Let no one add to these, let nothing be taken away from them," end quote. And so for the very first time within Christianity, 367 years after Christ, the 27 books that we now have in our canon were presented. Of course, they were not all accepted then. They went through a number of church councils and a number of processes which we'll get back to. Eventually, these 27 settled as the Christian canon of Scripture, New Testament canon, rather, which we now have. It's a very long and elaborate process, and what we have this week is an overview. But what can we take away from this study? One, there were many, many books, dozens of books in circulation in the early centuries of Christianity. They had authority within respective communities. Christianity was very diverse doctrinally. The diverse doctrines and the many diverse books led to the need for standardization, that is canon. 367 AD, for the first time, the 27 books that we now have were recommended, and through a long process, these 27 books firmed up, became standardized as the books that we now have in our New Testament canon. That's an overview of the process. We will get back to it another time, rehearse, elaborate, and come to understand more. This study has tremendous implications for how we understand the Bible, how we understand inspiration, and how we come to appreciate or have what we now possess as a canon. I am out of time. God bless you real good. I'm your host, Clinton Baldwin of Deacon Human Ministries International, 66A Brunswick Avenue in Spanish Town. Thank you very much. God bless. Walk good.